In lecture number 12, Comparison's Worldview, I want to just back up for just a minute. I had intended to talk to you a little bit in the last lecture about some experiences I had with peers or saints in Pakistan. And in one particular case, just about 20, 25 miles from where we lived, in south central Pakistan, there was a peer, a saint. And every year at that saint's place, they celebrated his, what they called an urs, or his birth, his death date, actually. And it was April, as I remember, 3, 4 days there, right in there where they celebrated his death day. And so people would come from far and wide. It was a place called Saki Sarvar, S-A-K-Y, and then another word, Sarvar, S-A-R-W-A-R. I would go, not to see the peer or the saint, but to sell literature. It was a great chance to, to get rid of literature and talk about Jesus and one thing another. I had used to have a loudspeaker on my, rigged up on my Jeep, and some literature there, and I would get a chance to talk to Muslims. Some of them probably, were not probably, many of them were illiterate, and they would be wearing these turbans. And so had the loudspeakers because there was a lot of competition, lots of noise and stuff. And so I would, tell them about the Injil al-Muqaddas, the holy Injil of Jesus. And I can still remember years and years ago that some of these people, these tribal guys, would come right up and they'd, in order to hear you and listen to you, they'd come up and they would, their face would be right in front of you. And as you told them about Jesus and about, his book and who he was, some of them had never heard about him. But what I wanted to mention was that, and this is on your class notes, page 11. That's why I want to refer to it. But I did want to mention that people would come to, make the request to this peer. I can remember one woman who prayed for a son. She couldn't have a son. Finally, through the auspices of that peer, she had a son, and they named him Pir Bakhsh, in other words, given of the peer. Others would name their sons Khuda Bakhsh, given by God. That's very common. Or some might name him Muhammad Bakhsh, given by Muhammad. So, interesting things went on at this fair. It was a religious fair, as I mentioned, remembering this saint, this peer. But all kinds of other people showed up too, including prostitutes. And they would carry on at this religious fair openly. And there would also be places where men would be dressed up as women and dancing on huge platforms in the most sensual way that you could imagine. And also these fellows, they had these huge bowls, where they'd put a motorcycle in and the guy would around and around and around, and you'd wonder how in the world he didn't kill himself. But I just wanted to mention that the peers, these saints, and my personal experience, and these are all over the country of Pakistan and other places as well. And a good place, really, a good opportunity to, give a witness as best you can, because that's where the people are. Now let's talk about Comparison's Worldview, which is the title of Lecture 12. And here we're talking about beings, and we're talking about power and space grid. But I wanted to mention the fact that the beings, in other words, some of the things here that of course, the beings of Allah, the archangels, angels. We already talked about this, the devils. But then there's the jinn, the karina, which is this jinn who is born at the same time you are, and is with you for your life, and is a bit of a, well, I guess a blessing and a curse. In other words, you get some use out of this karina, but then also some problems. Another one is the zar, and so on. Then you have the walis, holy men, saints, prophets. I've already talked to you a little bit about that saint close to where I lived. So you have these on the ends, but you have this in the middle. So you have the power, which is in this world, and we've talked about, some have talked about barakah, magic. Zikr is where you repeat God's name over and over again, and various and other powers that be, amulets, and these, of course, are unseen. Now, Paul Hebert, the well-known anthropologist who taught at Fuller for many years and then taught at Trinity Divinity School, talked about the flaw of the excluded middle. And when he was talking about the flaw of the excluded middle, he was talking about Western views. He was talking about not only the secular world, in other words, the non-Christian, but Christians too. He said, basically, we have left this out. We deny it. In other words, oftentimes think that, you know, no spirits and stuff like that. We just ignore it. We think it's all nonsense. He says that that's not true, and we should give some consideration that to this. And I remember too. Others who have pointed out the same thing. For instance, Christians in Africa are much more able and willing to get their mind around this kind of stuff than we are. So let's keep that in mind. Now, one of the questions, in fact, this is one of the questions on the forums, is the implications of what Paul Hebert has said. So I'm not going to discuss it here, but I want you to be thinking about it and then respond. For instance, the implications, I think that it's possible to be to go both ways too. You're in total denial, or all you think about is the devil and what he's up to and the demons and one thing or another. I think there are Christians really in both categories that so we need to think about the implications of this, but I'll leave that to the forum, and won't talk about it anymore right now. Now, next thing on the list here are space grids. What's space grids? Well, space grids is the idea that that in certain places the demons are very, very active. So we have to watch out for them. And this is a little amulet here. It's called the Triangle of Al-Ghazali, the greatest, perhaps, theologian that Islam has ever come up with, who died in 1111. He was the one who married Sufism with Orthodox Islam, and he was half Sufi himself. So they have this, the Triangle of Al-Ghazali. Never seen this in Pakistan, but I believe in the Arabic-speaking world, it is an amulet that is used to help out in these difficult places. Now, this sometimes is placed beneath a woman to give an easy delivery. In other words, a very difficult time. And so place this underneath the pillow, and the woman will help in the birth. Now, the idea here is, as you can see, letters have numerical value, and often, you know, and a letter has a numerical value, and so that's how they figure this out. And the numbers mean something. Odd numbers, by the way, are used for stones to cleanse yourself. In other words, when you go to the bathroom, you pick out a certain number of stones, always an odd number of stones. Use your left hand. This is Muslim talking. They don't believe in toilet paper, but they do use water. They also use stones, some of them. But I think something that we can relate to more easily is if we watch a movie on the pilgrimage, when Muslims pick up stones to throw at the devil and those three pillars that represent the devil, what do? They're supposed to pick out an odd number of stones. I think 47 or whatever it is. It's not quite clear sometimes how many, but it's supposed to be odd. Now, Muslims may not always understand or be able to explain to you, but that's the truth, and it's because of the space. Odd numbers protect in dangerous places. So I am going to be talking a little bit here more about the dangerous places in a minute, but they would protect you, odd numbers, especially number 5, protect you from the jinn and from the evil eye. I can remember in my ignorance preaching sometimes and holding up, you know, my hand like this, number 5, when I was preaching. Well, I was soon informed that that was not the way to do it, because this really, number, holding this here, is the way that you hold off or, you know, prevent a curse. So what I was doing, I guess, was could have been interpreted as, you guys are putting a curse on me and I'm protecting you from the evil curse. You see, there are 5 fingers here. If I had lost a finger, I suppose I could get away with it. But, yes, numbers. Are used a lot in space. Now, another thing that Muslims sometimes will talk to you about is the fact that the woman is from the left side, created from the left side, and that's really the evil side of a person. That's really the negative side. That's the side of, well, subject to temptation and vulnerability, and so women have to be protected. They are more vulnerable to temptation, and so they need to protected, and lest they fall and get into trouble. So that's one of the reasons too, while that they're not so welcome in worship. You know, Muslims sometimes would say, and we had the saying where I was, that wherever a man and a woman are together, Satan is there in their midst. He's there in that space. And another illustration I thought of was in Pakistan, I had a friend, a young friend who died. He wasn't from the well-accepted sect. It was the Ahmadi. There are probably about 4 million Ahmadis or Ahmadiyya in Pakistan, and they have been relegated to the status of non-Muslim because they believe that a prophet came after Muhammad, and so they're not very popular. They've been persecuted a great deal, in some ways persecuted more than Christians or Hindus. But I remember one young man was taking a Bible correspondence course, an Ahmadi, just a young man. He was from an Ahmadiyya family. And for some reason, he died. He got sick and he died. And so his father came to me and, you know, he was very glad that we had befriended him and he was taking a Bible correspondence course. And so the father said, you know what, I want you to come with me and we're going to go and see where the boy is buried. So I said, fine, we'll go out there and see the grave. And we drove out in the village and drove for quite a while in my old Land Rover. And then we got there, parked the Land Rover, and where do you think the boy was buried? He was buried right next to the saint. Because if you're buried next to the saint, the father and I guess the rest of the family thought that this would help to guarantee him to a place in paradise. Now, I don't know if the boy ever understood the gospel. I do know that he took a Bible correspondence course or two, and I don't know if he ever really came to faith, but I do remember that the father took me out there and showed me where this boy was buried right next door. It was a beautiful little enclosure where the peer's tomb, the saint's tomb, was inside, and right next door they had buried the boy. I'm sure it cost him a lot of money to do that, but that's where he was buried with the hopes that he would be, this would help his entrance into paradise. Another thing regard to space is that space around Mecca is haram. And that word haram is an interesting word. It is a double meaning word. It means, you know, in the one sense, it's holy, but it's also the word that's used for forbidden. In other words, certain sins like adultery and so on are haram. Eating pig meat is haram. But the space around Mecca is dangerous space, powerful space, and so powerful that Muslims are sometimes afraid to look up even at the Mecca from Kaaba from a distance because it's so powerful. So that space is powerful space. But I wanted to also point out the fact that there are areas where the demons, now I didn't mean to suggest that the demons were thick around in Mecca, that's not what I was saying, but I would say that there are special places like the latrines. You know, a latrine is where people go to the bathroom, marshes, wells, rivers, garbage dumps, kilns, where you make the bricks, trees, so on, certain trees, where they are believed to be spirit-infested. In other words, the jinn are there. So what do you do when you go into the latrine? This is what they, I guess it's an old British term. It's the term we used in Pakistan. Well, you say Bismillah, in the name of God, when you go through the door. One thing you don't do in the latrine is talk to anybody. I mean, you know, in these public latrines, I remember being in Karachi, in a public latrine, you don't talk to anybody. I remember talking to somebody a little bit in the latrine. It turned out that he was an imam, a mullah, you know, with a long beard, and he quickly informed me that this was not the place to talk. And I found out later that the main reason is that jinn inhabit these places. So watch your step when you're in the latrine, or garbage dumps, kilns, trees, and so on. You know, space, thinking, I have thought of this a little bit. I don't know what the significance of it is, but Jesus is at the right hand of God, isn't he? Not at the left hand. And he said one time that, you know, separate the sheep from the goats, the sheep on the right hand, the goats on the left hand. So what am I saying? I'm saying that there is some scriptural significance to space. I'm not saying anything spiritual or spooky or mystical about this, but I am saying that maybe we could use this too in our missiological application. I don't know to what extent we can apply it, though. We have to be careful. Prayer walking, I don't really believe that you can prayer walk and put the demons on the run by walking around the mosque. But, you know, Muslims don't always look favorably on that when young people come out and hold up their hands and walk around the mosque with their hands held up. I don't think we have to do that. But we do need to have an understanding of Muslim thinking and worldview when we do some of these things. What about demons and objects? In other words, can a demon inhabit an object, an animal? I think that it's possible, but I don't want to get so afraid of some little artifact or something that I think it's going to be demon-possessed. So I want to be careful about that. We need I think one missiological application here is that we need to think in terms of various things when we preach and witness in this kind of a context. One is truth, which we know about. In other words, we do preach the truth. We're strong on that in the Western world, you know. That's true. We want the truth. And notice the truth is here at the center. Rick Love, who wrote the book Muslims Magic in the Kingdom of God, who worked in Indonesia, he uses certain verses, and just want to make note of them. Colossians, of course, we've already referred to, but the work of Christ and his power, what all he did in Colossians 1:12 through 13. He has rescued us, verse 13, from the dominion of darkness and brought us into the kingdom of the Son he loves, in whom have we redemption, the forgiveness of sins. So that's Colossians. And then 1 Peter 3:22, I'll read that as well. And that says that who has gone into heaven and is at God's right hand with angels, authorities, and powers in submission to him. But Rick Love uses these kind of verses in his book, if you ever get a chance to read that book. But back to this topic here of truth, remember that we need to talk about some other things as well when we witness to Muslims and when we preach in Muslim contexts. We need to understand the power element, and oftentimes I think that Muslims are struggling with this issue more than in anything else. And then the issue of allegiance. To whom are they going to give their allegiance? And I think you can look at Jesus and some of the things he did, for instance, when he talked to the woman of Samaria in John 4. I think he deals with all of these topics and more in his discussion with her. He doesn't just, say, I am the way, the truth, and the life, which is the truth, of course. But he deals with other things as well. And we need to think of various things these issues as well when we're witnessing to Muslims. These are encounters, if you would, that we need to cover in our work and our witness to Muslims.